During Robert Brogdon's Olathe Buick GMC clearance event, save up to 20% on new models like the 2023 Buick Encore GX or GMC Sierra 1500. View their huge inventory at robertbrogdon.com and find your perfect match.
Welcome to the end of the weekend.
Please don't let today be Monday. Please don't let today be Monday. Please, 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 please don't let today be Monday.
This is Sports Sunday with Joshua Briscoe.
And then what followed was bad, even by Monday standards.
On Sports Radio 810 WHB.
I'm in a good mood for a bunch of reasons.
I pull up in Lexus like it's 07. I just hit a lick.
Now
I
Drake's
hit
playing.
The next one.
So many reasons.
Yeah, I know you learn your lesson. I could GPS you if you need a dressing.
The last promo that played before we came back from break was, I don't know who it was, but somebody was saying, I think it was Buster Olney, maybe? Sam, you don't want the, you do not want the Royals to make the playoffs. The Royals make the playoffs, every team in Major League Baseball is going to be afraid of them. And Charlie just went, and I cracked. That was hilarious. Cracked up. Other thing, random thing that's happening, the 13th Doctor for Doctor Who is going to be a woman, which is like just the internet is all over itself currently. She was in, have you seen Broadchurch, Charlie? We talked about Broadchurch at some point. It's like a little like crime mystery show with this woman and, well, no, she's not one of the detectives, but she's in it. It's David Tennant and I don't know the person he was with, his like co-detective or whatever. That show was interesting and good, so that's kind of exciting. I don't really watch Doctor Who, but I would like check out a couple episodes of this because it's new and interesting. And then also talking to Seth Kaiser makes me genuinely happy. Like, I really, sometimes I can be rightly accused of not loving the sports conversation, like the typical sports conversation. Sometimes that is said, and often that is true. Talking about the Chiefs with Seth is as sports talky as I'm possibly capable of being.
That whole interview just made me want it to be 2018.
This is where we're going now, Charlie.
Yeah.
Thank you, yes. Because here's the thing. If you are sitting here like I am, after listening to Seth, and if you miss some of it, we'll play a little bit of it again later towards the end of this hour. And you can listen to the whole thing. The whole thing will be podcast on 18WHB.com. You can find that on my Twitter page after the show, at JB Briscoe. You will not be able to miss this. But if you listen to that interview like I did, and you went, man, I am lusting after 2018. I want the Mahomes offense. Then you ought to be one of those, people. One of those people that is unafraid to say, you know what? Bleep it. I want Mahomes now. Because there are a handful of arguments against Mahomes starting this year, playing this year at all, whatever. And Seth did a pretty good job of refuting all of those. Now, if you heard the interview and you still are upset or still disagree with it, whatever, you want to see Alex Smith this year, cool. Tweet me, JB Briscoe. Call the show, 913-3810-810. Happy to hear it out. But, you know, if it really is an impossible offense to learn, then Mike Vick shouldn't have had success in it. Because Mike Vick, unless you've missed it, he did not go from the NFL to NASA. You can go to his, you know, like the dogfighting ring. Never struck me as exactly like not the sharpest bulb in the drawer. That's a little joke there. Hope you caught it. Nick Foles played as a rookie for a little while and then had some success with Andy Reid. Mahomes read defenses in college. His footwork is messy, but so is Aaron Rodgers' footwork. The offense this year, in 2017, is going to be very, very similar to the 2016 Chiefs offense. The 2016 Chiefs offense wasn't good enough. It just was not. It was not good enough in big moments. It was average in general. But when it needed to be good, when there was the most pressure on the offense, it failed. So what changed? You replace the ghost of Jamaal Charles with Kareem Hunt. Probably a good move, because I don't know if you think that Jamaal Charles can be healthy this year, but especially just comparing to last year, you had Kareem Hunt replacing non-existent 2016 Jamaal Charles. You're going to replace Jeremy Maclin snaps with Albert Wilson and Jehu Chesson and DeMarcus Robinson, that's not very exciting. That's a downgrade. The offensive line, you're going to replace Zach Fulton with Parker Anger. Maybe a slight upgrade. Chris Collins is going to get a bigger role. Tyreek Hill is going to get a bigger role. And I wonder, what is the offense in 2017 as currently constituted if nothing crazy happens? Travis Kelce doesn't get hurt. Tyreek Hill doesn't immediately become Antonio Brown. Chris Conley doesn't become Dwayne Bowe, which, by the way, like as I was talking to Seth, I was taking notes for things to revisit later. And whenever he said, I knew this because I saw his tweet also, whenever he said that his Chris Conley film review led him to believe that his ceiling is essentially Dwayne Bowe, I just wrote, Chris Conley is Dwayne Bowe, lol. Because for everybody, I feel like there's the Venn diagram of people who hated Dwayne Bowe and who are super optimistic about Chris Conley is just a circle. I think those people are the same. The kind of optimism you have about a young receiver that hasn't proven anything also just seems like you would have hatred for a talented receiver who didn't reach his potential. So that kind of makes me laugh. But again, if he became Dwayne Bowe with surer hands, that'd be great. I loved Dwayne Bowe. I loved watching Dwayne Bowe. I thought he was in a lot of ways underrated. That contract ended up being bad. But I think as a player, whenever he was the Dwayne Bowe that I choose to remember, he was actually underrated. So I wonder what the ceiling is of the offense if it just goes according to plan. In fact, I don't really wonder. I know it. It's being like 12th. Like if everyone just sort of, if people take steps forward and if there are some chemistry building opportunities and the offensive line operates better as a unit and blah, blah, blah. With Alex Smith, this offense is not going to extend above 12th in the league. It's just not going to happen. Unless, again, something crazy with Kareem Hunt. If Kareem Hunt becomes a Rookie of the Year candidate. And I think there's a chance. I really like Kareem Hunt. You heard me talk about it with Seth for a little bit there. We talked about it after the draft also. Kareem Hunt does two things extremely well. He has great balance, so getting a little bit of a chip hit does not take him off of his feet. And he has great vision, which is a must-have quality for NFL running backs. Nile Davis had basically everything except for good vision, and he couldn't stay in the league. Kareem Hunt has that vision. He has great balance. So I'm hopeful and excited for that. Spencer Ware was hurt last year, and before he got hurt last year and also whenever he was playing in 2015, he looked really good. He looked especially good before his injury last year. I mean, that was a bright spot, and now the bright spot in the backfield continues to grow. But the ceiling in the passing game is pretty low. I don't see Alex Smith suddenly, finally, in his what? Like, when was he drafted? Was he drafted in 2004 or 5? Charlie says 2005. In his dozenth or so season. I don't think I'm going to go ahead and argue that this is going to be the year that Alex Smith uses Chris Conley as a springboard into top five quarterback play. I just don't see it. We can talk about the floor and the ceiling forever because that's what we're talking about, this quarterback discussion. I don't know if anyone can really argue that Mahomes doesn't lift the ceiling for the Chiefs offense. Because just go watch some of his tape from college. And look at how he throws the deep ball, and then imagine the guy running to catch that deep ball being Tyreek Hill. Tyreek Hill is faster than just about anybody in the league, if not literally the entire NFL. Let him run a straight line. Bleep you, Herm Edwards. Out of context, people who didn't hear the second hour must be so confused why I just sideswiped Herm Edwards. Herm Edwards, we played a clip from Herm Edwards earlier talking about how he doesn't think that Tyreek Hill is very versatile. Can't beat you deep because you can't find him because he's too short. Just like DeSean Jackson, one of the best deep threats in the modern NFL era, right? Think about DeSean Jackson in Philadelphia. I mean, he was good for like an 80-yard touchdown every week. So, again, sideswiping Herm Edwards, but with a reason behind it. Mahomes is going to have a way better chance of making Tyreek Hill look like DeSean Jackson than Alex Smith does. I'm afraid that Alex Smith is going to make Tyreek Hill look like Talon Austin. And I'm afraid that he's going to make Travis Kelce look like just another guy. Now, both Hill and Kelce have extreme skills after the catch. And that's great. But it's just not good enough. We've run our course on the Alex Smith experiment. It's one of several reasons that I was advocating a rookie quarterback before any of this stuff really gained steam. Because I said you have to win by either having an elite quarterback or a valuable quarterback. And the Chiefs last year was the Chiefs doing their best with Alex Smith. And offensively, it wasn't even close to good enough. It wasn't even close. Defense was great. Defense was great last year, and the defense is getting healthier this year. I think the defense is going to take a step back. Not because I'm trying to bleep on your dreams, because I'm also bleeping on my own dreams. But because if Justin Houston comes back healthy, game changer, right? Huge. I mean, like, defensive player of the year candidate, as long as his knees work, which is a clause you have to attach to the end of that. You can't say, well, if Justin Houston's knees are back to where he was before his knee injuries, that never really happens. You're never the exact same guy after you have massive knee reconstruction. Reconstructions, ACL, whatever, all of that. That's not a foregone conclusion that he's going to come back. But let's say he does. The rate that the defense forced turnovers and scored last year, even with an extremely talented group of guys, that is an improbable amount. They forced an improbable number of turnovers. And also, I don't think for a second that they're not going to have any injuries this next season. There's always somebody. And now, the problem that I think the Chiefs have is the top of their defense looks pretty good. But if Marcus Peters goes down, ball game. Eric Berry goes down, really hard to deal with that. And you can say, you know, any team you lose one of your stars. Yeah, but the Chiefs have like six of them. The Chiefs have like five or six guys that I don't think they can play without. And that's one thing, we talked about Evan Silva's tweet taking the under on 9.5 wins for the Chiefs. We talked about that last week. The idea that the Chiefs are a fragilely stacked game of Jenga right now is my best bit of logic for taking the under on 9.5. Because what is the offense if they lose Hill or Kelce? What happens to the defense if they lose Justin Houston again? Maybe it's survivable because they did it last year. But what if they lose Marcus Peters and then all of a sudden Phillip Gaines and his knee is playing opposite Terrence Mitchell? What if they lose Eric Berry? I really love Ron Parker, but then it's Ron Parker and Daniel Sorensen. Daniel Sorensen. Those three guys in that order are the Eric Berry, Ron Parker, Daniel Sorensen, 1-2-3. I will put up against any set of safeties in the league. You find me any team with three better safeties in that order, and I'm not sure you could find it, honestly. I might have an irrational amount of love for Ron Parker and Daniel Sorensen. I don't know. But I also feel like I'm a slightly lower on Eric Berry than your average bear, so I think it evens out probably. But if those two guys are starting and then your third guy ends up being, they drafted somebody, or I guess Eric Murray from last year, I guess is your next safety. The Chiefs have several pieces for me that I find to be potential tower knocker overs trademark. That's the, don't at me. There's no better way I could have possibly said that. I phrased that perfectly. And I think that with Patrick Mahomes at quarterback instead of Alex Smith, you've got more wiggle room. Like, really, this is crazy. But if you were to tell me that the Chiefs were going to lose, like, Marcus Peters and Eric Berry next year, I'd be like, all right, well, it's time for Mahomes then. Like, wait, what? What do you mean? No, I said Marcus Peters and Eric Berry, not Alex Smith. What are you saying? Because Alex Smith is not winning this division with an average defense. It's just not going to happen. But I want to see Patrick Mahomes anyway. Because for all of the reasons that get brought up as potential stoppers in that conversation, I think Seth ruled out a bunch of them. Matt Verderam said it earlier this week, towards the beginning of the week. He said, it won't happen, but the more Mahomes tape I watch, the more I agree with real MN Chiefs fan Seth Kaiser. If he gets the mental side down, start him now. And I don't think there's a huge reason to not start him now. Mental, I mean, I don't think there's a huge reason that, to assume, I phrased that poorly. I don't think there's a huge reason to assume that he can't get the mental side down. And if that's the case, and you're going with that set of logic, yeah, bring it on. The other thing I think you can ask is, would it happen? Is that realistic at all? Reed's been very loyal to Alex Smith. But what were Andy Reid's other options? Nick Foles, Tyler Bray, Chase Daniel. I would have been loyal to Alex Smith too. I was. I was not out here ringing a cowbell saying, bring on Nick Foles. I did not want that. Andy Reid didn't either. Although, Nick Foles did have that game where, like, after Alex Smith's concussion, they, like, sort of, like, held him out an extra week. Someone on Twitter brought that up to me, and I completely forgotten about it. I don't read a ton into that, but if Nick Foles had been really good in that game, I think he might have seen that change happen then. Probably not, but maybe. Regardless, I don't think you have to assume that Andy Reid, I don't think you can assume that Andy Reid would forego a better chance at winning to appease Alex Smith. That's not in Andy Reid's bones. I don't think Andy Reid is going to look at this team, and if he says, you know what, the best chance for this team to win is with Patrick Mahomes at quarterback, they would start Patrick Mahomes. I really believe that. I don't think Andy Reid, I don't know how old Andy Reid is off the top of my head. Charlie, this is a Google job. I mean, I could find that in like 30 seconds, but I would probably forget my train of thought. Andy Reid is not, he's not Brett Veach, who is, I think, 39 and could build a team over the next decade. How old is Andy Reid? 59, which is actually young. I would have guessed over 60, I think. Maybe there's like a Walrus thing going on there. And Walrus years, how many years old is it? I love Andy Reid. I'm sorry. But regardless, holy cow, he's 19 years older than Tom Brady. That just crossed my mind. Andy Reid is 59 and Tom Brady is 40. The difference between Tom Brady and Andy Reid age-wise is less than me. Oh my. Oh God. That's incredible. That's so great. Tom Brady's going to play till he's 60. But Andy Reid has been in these conversations. He's got a 5-year extension, we think. We've been having these conversations around Andy Reid, but how much longer is he going to be building in Kansas City? When is he going to eventually, maybe it's 5 years, maybe it's 10 years. I don't think Andy Reid has any interest in putting in a year's worth of work with a quarterback he believes in less. So I think we have to entertain that possibility. 913-3810-810 is the phone number if you want to call in and talk about Mahomes, the Chiefs, or really anything, but God, I love talking about the Chiefs in July. We'll start with Tommy Moe. Tommy Moe, what's on your mind?
You said Tom Brady and Andy Reid is 19. You said less than you and Danny Klingscale, or what?
No, he's saying Tom Brady is 39 and Andy Reid is 59.
What?
Charlie just told me, which is 20 years, which blows my mind.
Yeah.
Blows my mind.
You think they should be farther apart? Is that what you're saying?
Yeah. Because Tom Brady seems like a youthful man, and Andy Reid seems like a like a grizzly war veteran in this league. And it just, I don't know, that was just shocking to me.
Yeah, I know. Andy Reid talks about cheeseburger, and Tom Brady talks about his wife. So,
right.
You know, there you go.
Right.
Hey, interesting topic with your gentleman, Mr. Kizer, on. I thought he had some great points mm-hmm. For Patrick Mahomes. Mm-hmm. And I agree with that. Has there been any buzz or any talk about Jehu Chesson around? Has there been any talk about this guy could come in and maybe take Macklin's spot and the opposite of Conley? Or are we going to see Albert Wilson, Tyreek Hill? Because I like Tyreek Hill in spots. I hope we don't want to overuse him. I think he's as dangerous as a punt returner as he is a wide receiver. I think he's as feared as much of a punt returner as a wide receiver. And if he's out playing wide out every play, you know, 85% of the offensive plays, you know, last year I thought was a great mix of him. And I just, you know, he's young and he's getting underpaid and he mm-hmm. probably wants to play more exposure mm-hmm. and he wants to get paid here in 2 or 3 years. So like I said, but Jehu Chesson, is there been any talk about him? Because he's coming off knee surgery. He had a good 15, I think, surgery after that or during that. And then last year he was coming off knee surgery. So
yeah, and the quarterback play at Michigan was bad last year. Yeah, well, two things really quick. One, I keep comparing Tyreek Hill to DeSean Jackson. I want to keep doing that. Also, DeSean Jackson returned punts for a very long time. So I don't think that those end up being mutually exclusive. I think he can be a number one receiver and also a punt returner, just not also a kickoff returner, which is fine. I think that's less important anyway. On Jehu Chesson, I haven't heard anything from anyone about Jehu Chesson through mini camps. And mini camp, the guy who was getting talked about most by Andy Reid and people around the Chiefs in general was DeMarcus Robinson. He's just been in the year, been in the system for an extra year. But Jehu Chesson will be a guy throughout training camp that I think we'll start to hear about a little bit more because he's going to have to be talked about. That whole group of receivers trying to replace Jeremy Maclin is going to demand conversation. But I have a kind of gross feeling that we're going to get a lot of Albert Wilson, which I just don't think I want unless he's faking punts.
Thank you. That was his highlight of his Chiefs career, and it helped the Chiefs win that game.
Sure, yeah.
The Falcons. Hey, good for Albert Wilson.
Yep.
I just, like I said, you got a kid that, you know, he's somewhat of a local kid, don't you?
Chesson?
Yes.
I don't think so. Where is he from?
St. Louis. Well, St. Louis.
Oh, okay.
I mean,
cool.
Somewhat of a local kid. Yeah.
Sure.
He was a stud track guy, kind of my remembering running track in St. Louis and going to Michigan as a big-time football player and getting hurt. So, like I said, he's kind of quietly on my radar to see mm-hmm. if he can kind of sneak into that role and have a somewhat of a productive rookie year, albeit a fourth-round draft pick.
Tommy Mo, I appreciate the call as always, and I appreciate the bringing up Jehu Chesson because I do think that he's going to be one of the kind of like the sexy training camp stories where you go, hey, you know, this guy's making some plays. He's interesting because, as Tommy Mo brought up, he had a really good 2015, and then I think it was 2015, he ended up struggling with injuries and widely, I think even John Dorsey said that Michigan's quarterback play last year was a big part of the problem for why Chesson didn't bounce back more last season, and that's why he slid down the draft board a little bit. So I don't think he's going to be I would be absolutely shocked if he starts in the first half of the season especially. But I could see him becoming a contributor and hopefully stepping up over a guy like DeMarcus Robinson because he's a really good special teamer, and I think Albert Wilson is a pretty good special teamer also. But I just have a really hard time talking myself into any of these guys playing a big role offensively opposite of Tyreek Hill. And, I mean, I will fight to the death about Tyreek Hill as a number one receiver option and also returning punts. They'll have somebody else return kicks. In fact, I think Kareem Hunt's name came up as a possible kick returner option. And if it's not, then there are other guys. The Chiefs have some fast dudes. DeAnthony Thomas, for all of his problems, he can return some kicks. This segment has been unbelievably long because, man, the difference, I don't know what this says about me. Maybe I'm just an imbalanced radio host, but the difference of talking about the Royals for an hour and talking about the Chiefs for freaking 90 minutes, they both feel like they took about, I don't know, 70 minutes to get through. That's not true. The Royals conversation today was good, but talking about the Chiefs in the offseason is so much fun sometimes. It warms my cold, dead, dark soul.
This is Sports Sunday.
Then I realized that NFL Network right now is doing a top 10 list of top 10 Peyton Manning games. God, that man has caused me more pain than my parents' divorce.
With Joshua Briscoe.
My parents aren't divorced, but
on Sports Radio 810 WHB.
Look, mama hit my phone and said rap's no good.
Welcome back to the show.
Better than telling me the check's no good.
I'm trying to talk and not actually just mouth Drake lyrics, but God, it's hard. Funny cause I really did more than I should. I made a decision last night that I would die for it.
Just to show the city what it takes to be alive for it. Sorry, okay. Sorry, I got
real caught up in the music. I haven't listened to Views in a while. I should go back and listen to Views. More Life was just kind of okay. This is our Drake segment. No, something Charlie asked me during the break, and boy, we've got to figure out. The people that I've worked with most here for this show and just in general are Charlie and Beards. And I was thinking about this earlier today. I was thinking about last night. I didn't have an original thought today until the show started because I don't think before 9 o'clock. Are you kidding me? If it wasn't for, like, muscle memory, I would never get to work. But Charlie and Beards are both cursed with different diseases, I think, as far as producing the show and everything. Because I think Charlie just sort of has an inconfidence blanketing over him.
I wouldn't say that, but continue.
I think it's what it is. Where you're just, or at least that kind of a hesitance. You're a little hesitant to jump in with a question or whatever. You've had a couple today though that have been on point, but I think you're a little hesitant to jump in, and to maybe push back on something if you disagree. And I'm cool with that because you're capable of having these actual conversations. But on air, you're a little bit timid, maybe a little bit of timidity, which I think is partially probably from a good place of not wanting to like interrupt me. Or like step on my toes, which is good because sometimes that's not a skill that everybody has, a perception that everyone is capable of making. But Beards, on the other hand, does not have that timidity, but he knows nothing. He doesn't know anything. He knows about the NBA and Game of Thrones. And I don't even think he knows when, I don't think he understands when people are talking about other things. He just hears it somehow as NBA and Game of Thrones. So Charlie asked me a question during the break about Kareem Hunt taking over for Spencer Ware, Tre'Kendrick West, the running backfield in general. Because we talked a lot about what the offense looks like with Patrick Mahomes instead of Alex Smith, and I really like that whole conversation, and it does sort of push us towards the rest of the backfield. And I don't have like a hard and fast prediction system for when a rookie will eventually unseat a veteran. But one thing that we've seen to be true that I mentioned a couple of times on this show before is that Andy Reid is usually not trying to hide anything come training camp. Reid is willing to say, we want Mitch Morse to be our starting center as a rookie. We're going to give him reps in training camp. I think Kareem Hunt's going to get reps in training camp. And then I think by really the start of the season, we're going to see Ware starting, Hunt being the second guy off the bench, and West being option three, and a pretty good option three. The Chiefs are going to have some of the best second and third options in the league. The problem is that top guy going to be able to assert himself? But the good times we've seen from Spencer Ware have been really good. And I really like the things that Kareem Hunt has brought to the table. So I think that we're going to see Kareem Hunt play a pretty big role sooner than most people would expect. Or most people currently expecting. Like, I mean, playing a role in game one. Probably taking handoffs and checkdowns from Alex Smith. In the studio here, we have three little TVs, and one of them I can barely see. It's got Wimbledon on it or something right now. I don't really care about that. One of them's got MLB Network, and they're doing like best of the week plays or whatever. I don't really care about that. And then the other TV, for a while, it was an E60 about that jet that crashed with like the whole soccer team in it. And there's like a lot of sobbing, like plane wreckage and like caskets and stuff. It was hard to watch. So I changed it to SportsCenter because I don't want to multitask between like tragedy and trying to do this show. And then it backfired because now on SportsCenter, it's just constant McGregor Mayweather coverage, like tour coverage. And this is the second most tragic thing I've seen on TV today, at least.
That stuff's been great, though, this week. You got to admit.
Man, I don't want to admit it. I don't care. They're both just really garbage people.
All of this is going to be way more exciting than the actual fight.
That's true. Yeah, they're going to keep selling the fight well. But by the time we get to the fight, we're going to hate both of them even more.
Oh, yeah.
Like, Mayweather's a domestic abuser. McGregor has said a bunch of, like, racist things now.
I saw something about how they shared a private jet.
I wondered about that.
Which is just like...
I actually was wondering if they went so far as to take separate private jets, because I figured they probably wouldn't. But maybe they would just for the sake of the whole thing. I don't think either of them hate each other nearly as much as it looks like. The reason that I tend to prefer McGregor than the fact that he doesn't hit women, apparently, which separates him from Mayweather. Did I say the right name so far? Great. Jason and Cole Hamels. Is it that McGregor is like, he's playing a villain really well. Like, he's like an entertainer. I think he's doing this with a purpose, and I respect that. Not necessarily him as a person, though, because I don't really know how I could do that. We may or may not end up playing another clip from the interview with Seth Kaiser we played earlier. If you missed it, you can go to 18WHB.com later on today, go to additional programming, and we'll post the podcast. You'll be able to find it on my Twitter. You'll be able to find it on the Roughing the Kicker iTunes feed. It'll be all over. But a couple of the things that we talked about there that we haven't touched on, one of the things that we talked about that we haven't touched on since, is the Raiders being considered an offensive juggernaut. The idea that they are, like, this team extremely close to taking the next step offensively, and how really their offensive numbers last year basically looked like they had played an extra game because of how bad their defense was. Their defense kept giving them the ball back. They moved the ball quickly. So they had an entire extra game of stats, essentially, spread out over the season. Some more interesting stats come about Derek Carr. I think it's just fascinating. These were tweeted out by Matt Verderam. He's on the show last week. He's on Twitter. I think he's just at Matt Verderam. So over the last 2 years, the Raiders are 6-10 against teams with winning records. They're 2-10 against playoff teams. Okay, catch this again. The Raiders are 2-10 against playoff teams over the last two seasons. Both of those wins are against Brock Osweiler. So I'm guessing there was a Broncos win and a Texans win. Otherwise, I think he would have just said they're both against the Broncos with Osweiler, whatever. In 2016, just last year, Derek Carr played four games versus playoff teams. His average stat line, 24 of 38, which is 62.3% completion percentage, for 234 yards and 6.2 yards per attempt, with 1.75 touchdowns and half an interception average per game. In 2016, same year, Alex Smith played five games versus playoff teams. His average stat line, 21 of 32, a 66.9% completion percentage, for 246 yards on 7.69 yards per attempt, 0.8 touchdowns, 0.4 interceptions per game. Every one of those categories, Alex Smith takes the W except for touchdowns thrown, which is, again, a huge part of the whole thing. But against playoff teams last year, Alex Smith had a higher yards per attempt average than Derek Carr did. You could probably win some barroom bets on that, right? Are barrooms a thing? Did I just mix bars and ballrooms? Go to a ballroom dancing class and say, hey, who had the higher yards per attempt against playoff teams last year? I think that's crazy. I just think that's worth bringing up. The reign of the Raiders, I think, is probably being a bit overstated currently. I think they're a really talented team. They're a fun team. But I think another thing that helps them is something that I realized just a couple days ago. This is something that I have struggled with for the entirety of my Chiefs fandom. I'm 22. for whatever reason, 2007 is the year I remember like really digging in. The year they drafted Dwayne Bowe. I used to. I think that's when I shifted from liking baseball more to my liking football more. So we're a solid 10 years into my like my day to day life being impacted by the football team that I root for. For those last 10 years, I have struggled with something really interesting. And Charlie just gave me the break sign, so I'll break it down whenever we come back.
This is Sports Sunday.
Drake.
With Joshua Briscoe.
Welcome back to the very end of Sports Sunday. The end forever. The last ever episode.
On Sports Radio 810 WHB.
Confusing. There's so many beats to this song now. I don't know if I can ever use that liner as the liner to the end of the show. It's so confusing. Welcome back to the very end of the very end of the... I don't know. What's going on? I'm so triggered right now. There's too much Drake stacking over too much Drake. Just kidding. There's no such thing as too much Drake. All right. So this is really the last segment of the show then, huh? The thing I was talking about before we went to break, before that little radio tease, is about something that I've been struggling with as my entire fandom as a Chiefs fan. I need to figure out what it is. It is so much more fun to root for teams that have some swagger about them. I think that's the whole thing. Is the Chiefs have largely been so devoid of that. I remember just watching Chiefs games in like 2012, whatever, 2013, and just even like looking at them and like, I hate their uniforms now. I hate their uniforms. I hate the logo. I hate the team. I hate the coaches. I hate the players. I hate it. This is all so bland. Watching other teams just was more interesting. Every other team seemed more like a real NFL franchise. And I think part of it I realized through the Royals, which I'll get to in a second. But also, like, there were some examples. Like, you know, Tony Gonzalez had some moments, but he was still kind of, like, workmanlike, you know? Trent Green had some beautiful times, but he didn't really play, like, with a swagger about him. Like the swagger of a pirate. Dwayne Bowe kind of did. Larry Johnson did. Jamaal Charles did a little bit. I'm probably forgetting a couple of guys. I also wondered for a second if I was making it a racial thing, either for the players or for the city. And then I remember that Aaron Rodgers and Brett Favre played some of the most fun football I've ever seen in Green Bay, so that's definitely not it. I was just thinking about how interesting that all is and how I've realized that recently in Kansas City with the Royals are so much more fun whenever Jason Lockenfora hates them. It's more fun to have a team that can be a villain for somebody else. That's just a more fun way of doing sports. Because Moose and Hosmer and Kane all play baseball with sort of a frivolousness that just makes the whole experience more fun. Nobody embodied it better during his good times than Yordano Ventura. I mean, he was the perfect embodiment of just sort of playing the game differently. And I know a lot of people and largely an older generation once athletes to play their games just as a business trip and just as a day at work. And I don't want that. I've realized that more and more over the last couple of years, I guess. I have more fun whenever it looks like the guys playing the game are also having fun. I don't know if that means anything. I just thought it was kind of interesting. A little bit more on Patrick Mahomes. They're just going to run out of time. Oh, Charlie has something. Charlie at the mic. Just turn your mic on, Charlie. Just do it.
I was just
going
to say, how did the Chiefs get that swagger?
Patrick Mahomes is going to do it.
I was going to say.
Sorry. That's a good interjection. Because I did not finish my thought. And that's also why I wondered if it was a race thing. Because I was like, Alex Smith, for his moments, is not a swaggering quarterback. Patrick Mahomes is going to be. But also, it's because he plays like Brett Favre and Aaron Rodgers. Maybe it's kind of a reckless thing, although I don't really think of like Jay Cutler or Matt Stafford being especially swaggerous. But yeah, that was
That was born out of my desire to see Patrick Mahomes play quarterback for the Chiefs sooner rather than later. That's where that was all coming from. Because it's just a more exciting life to live. It's a more exciting fandom to be a part of. Yeah, thank you, Charlie, for making sure that I actually landed my point there. If you want to hear the whole Seth Kizer interview, you can do it on the podcast page. I've mentioned all that several times. You might be listening to this on the podcast already. If so, thanks for listening. But if you missed the interview and you happen to be in the car right now and you're not going to look it up later, I want to break down a couple of things that he mentioned. And as he sort of shut down these anti-rookie Mahomes arguments, and I'm with him on almost all of this, so I was going to have, you know, take calls or whatever, but we're not going to have time today, so you can tweet me. He started off by saying, you know, that Mahomes' footwork is often criticized. He then pointed out that Aaron Rodgers has some of the worst footwork in the NFL, but we don't notice it because talent, arm talent, overwhelms bad footwork. So yeah, Mahomes needs to get the timing of a West Coast offense down, figure all that out and everything. And it's going to take some time, probably. But I'm sure that the quarterback coach he's had since the draft since he was drafted here has been happy to work with him on that. Second, Seth talked about Mahomes' accuracy. He contended that he simply was as accurate as any quarterback in the draft behind only Deshaun Watson. And even then, he was only a small margin behind Deshaun Watson. And he said he grades NFL and NCAA accuracy the same way. Mahomes is going to make mistakes. He's going to try to fit the ball in the windows that Alex Smith wouldn't do. But don't let your conditioning over these last several years of Matt Castle to Brady Quinn to Alex Smith, don't let that change what you want from this team, what you want from your offense. We've been very conditioned, and Mahomes is going to come and frazzle all that up. And we've also seen him read defenses in college because he did it at Texas Tech. So Seth took the two biggest arguments then against rolling with Mahomes. The idea that it'll take too long for him to fit in Reed's offense and the idea that playing him too soon may damage Mahomes for the future. He then proceeded to talk about how Michael Vick came in and ran Andy Reid's offense very well very soon. And that Mahomes is going to be behind an offensive line that's going to protect him with weapons he can get the ball to. Not a lot of rookie quarterbacks had Travis Kelce and Tyreek Hill to throw the ball to. Not many of them had some of the best offensive line play in football the year prior. He's not going to get David Card. Last year, the two best offensive lines against pass pressure were the Raiders and the Chiefs. I think Mahomes would survive. I think at this point, getting him in the game will probably help his development more than keeping him on the sidelines will. So I'm ready to see Patrick Mahomes sooner rather than later. And I think this topic throughout training camp and the whole season is going to be delicious. Thank you to Seth Kizer for joining the show. Thank you, Charlie Carlin, for running the board and occasionally interjecting some brilliant knowledge. My name is Joshua Briscoe. I'm on Twitter at JB Briscoe. Bad timing, Charlie. Bad dog. Bye, Mom.